Andrew Stoughton joins us once again. Andrew, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, I guess let's start with the bullpen. What's going wrong? How can they fix it?
You know, that's a tough question. I think the big thing that you kind of look at right away is Drew Storen, who came in for Ben Revere. I still kind of like the trade because it allowed them to move Aaron Sanchez to the rotation, even though that's kind of starting to go south a little bit on them, I think. But Storen's velocity's down. He just hasn't looked like the, you know, elite late-inning guy that you were hoping that you were getting. And he kind of didn't at the end of last year as well, which I think everybody hoped was because Jonathan Papelbon was there and there was an uncomfortable situation in Washington where he lost his job as a closer, even though he was doing great until Papelbon came over at the trade deadline or in July last year. And so people sort of wrote off the fact that he wasn't great down the stretch for the Nationals. And now you start to wonder, maybe that was, there were bigger signs there, because Storen really hasn't been himself. And also Brett Cecil hasn't been himself. And Gibbons keeps going to him, and I understand why. He's been a great reliever for the Jays for the last couple of years. And last year it sort of took him a little while to get going. But that's a concern, too. I mean, those are two of your most important bullpen arms right there. The other guys are just guys. And you know, sometimes they're okay, sometimes they're not okay. And that's kind of what happens in a bullpen. And I'm not too concerned about the Chavez's and Gavin Floyd's, but it's really Storen and Cecil that are the guys who have to figure something out here.
Well, you know, Cecil's the interesting one because, you know, he's been pretty consistent for a while now. Once he realized he wasn't going to be a starter, and I get the loyalty factor from Gibbons wanting to go back to his guy, thinking kind of, you know, you got to pitch your way out of it, right? But at some point, maybe that he's got to spend, you know, less time in the game and more time on off days fine-tuning. Like, is it his release point? What do you see wrong with Cecil right now?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. I was looking at it the other day. I wrote a little bit about it that, you know, his curveball is really his bread and butter pitch, and that hasn't been working for him. You know, it doesn't look all that different. I mean, in terms of, like, the depth and the movement and in terms of the velocity that he's throwing it at, but guys just aren't biting on it. They're not swinging at it the way that they were last year. There isn't a whole lot that looks too different between what he's doing now and then what he did last year when he was so successful. And everybody remembers at the end of the year, you know, what a great run he had. Coming into this year, he hadn't allowed an earned run in, you know, 38 appearances or something like that. When he left in the playoffs, when he got injured, you know, it was a gut punch because he was such an important guy for them. So it's only been about a month here into the season, so it's a little soon to be too worried, especially because it's a reliever and it's a guy who's pitched, you know, 10 innings or not too much more than 10 innings. But yeah, it really seems like it's the curveball that is the thing, or maybe he's just not able to set it up well with the fastball. But everything, you know, in terms of velocity and all that, looks like it should be working fine. And I get why Gibbons wants him to try to pitch out of it. And he also doesn't really have much of a choice because they're hurting for left-handed pitchers back there. You know, yep. Cecil, right now Cecil's the only one on the roster. Pat Vendetti was here. He was not doing so well. I think that was warranted. And Aaron Loop's hurt. Franklin Morales is hurt. And that would, I think, take some pressure off Cecil as well if those guys were available. But so it's not a great situation at the moment.
Andrew Stoughton joins us from BlueJaysNation.com. What's the timeline on Loop and those guys coming back potentially?
They seem they're getting there. They're Loop and Morales, I think, both are into rehabbing and are making progress. I don't know the specific timeline, to be perfectly honest, because I think, you know, you never know when there's going to be setbacks
exactly.
And stuff like that. But it looks like they're on their way back, which is good. But I don't think it's like imminent. I don't think it's going to be this week or something like that. So we'll just have to sort of hold our breaths and hope that Cecil figures something out.
Andrew, it's the one story that hasn't gone away right now. Colabello. Now, I've met him once. We had him on the show, was in studio. Seemed like a really nice guy. It's a one-time meeting. What else can I say based on it? But the steroid that he got, that he failed the test for, that's not one that just naturally shows up in a lot of things. I know he's claiming he doesn't know where it came from. He wouldn't be the first baseball player to say that, only be proven that was completely, you know, fabricated later on. What do you make of the Colabello thing? Is he helping himself by constantly saying, you know, I don't know where it came from, I don't know where it came from? What do you make of it?
To be honest, I think he is helping himself. You know, I was just writing something about this, and you know, before the phone rang to talk to you, and you know, Michael Saunders missed 150 games last year because he stepped on a sprinkler, and people were sort of livid about the fact that he's not able to be on the field. And Tolovello is getting, I think, more sympathy, though also more vitriol from people as well. But I think people are sympathetic to what's happening with Tolovello because he's been coming out and saying, I don't know where this all came from, like you said. And he does seem like a nice guy. Everybody seems to think that he's a genuinely nice guy. You know, nice guys do bad things or things they shouldn't too, you know. And when you look at the evidence, which is that this is an antiquated steroid, you know, everybody says it's one that the East German swim team used, you know, years and years ago in the Olympics. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, I think there was a piece at USA Today where Victor Conte, the Balco guy, spoke about it. Said maybe that's from cross-contamination from dirty glassware at makeshift labs. And it's like, well, that's, you know, even if it's cross-contamination, you're still, you know, that's still a shady kind of a lab. Like, you're still doing something, getting a supplement from somewhere. Oh, you know, this is all, of course, speculation. But, you know, if that was the case, you're not going to GNC and grabbing that off the shelf. Like, there's something weird going on here, I think, for sure. And I would like to believe in. But it's hard. It's hard when that, you know, they do the testing works. The players wouldn't consent to the testing if it didn't work, you know?
Yeah, well, 100% agreed on that. And I think that's a very key point you bring up, Andrew. It's one that, and maybe because so many players have cried wolf before, that it's hard to sure, you want to believe a person, but then I take out the heartstrings factor and I look and say, like, I could get if it's something that's over the counter. But this steroid is not something that, you know, the research that I've done talking to people, this is not one that's just readily available in some supplements.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think it comes down to, it's a shame, I think, but it's just the way our minds work. It's like, you know, if it was a guy who we didn't like, who wasn't a nice story, you know, if it was, I guess I shouldn't say someone's name, but if it was someone that fans were kind of inclined to not like, they might not be as inclined to believe him. But because Tolovello was such a wonderful story last year and had such a ridiculous great year last year, you know, you want it to not be true.
Andrew, a few other things. What do you make, like, the strikeouts early on in the season? People thought, okay, you know what, it'll change. Well, it hasn't changed. What are they swinging at bad pitches? I haven't watched the Jays games from start to finish. I kind of channel surf. Are they just getting beat by better pitching? What's happening right now?
You know, I think it's a real mixture of a lot of things, to be honest. And I think looking at the lineup as a whole is maybe a mistake too. I mean, Jose Bautista got squeezed a little bit last night. You know, if he's getting a couple strikeouts and he's, you know, missing all, you know, taking borderline pitches that he shouldn't, that are getting called strikes, I'm not too worried about that. You know, Encarnacion's a slow starter. I'm sure will be fine. Josh Donaldson obviously is doing great, and that's, you know, that's not a concern at all. Though he's, you know, he kind of called out his teammates last night, saying after the game, you know, the guys have to step it up and take some better at bats. And I think, you know, if you start going down the line, you start to see where the strikeout numbers are spiking. There are guys like, you know, Russell Martin that just not looked good at all this year. He didn't look great at the start of last year either. But last year he was taking some walks and he was striking out, you know, 22% of the time instead of 46% of the time. So that's a bit of a concern, especially because you have no catching depth, basically. And because you're paying him a lot of money to be more than just a glove back there, which he's terrific at. But yeah, I don't know if it's that they're swinging at bad pitches per se. I know they definitely have run into tough starters. You know, Quintana, I think they probably should have done a better job against last night. You know, he's a lefty, but he's really an underrated pitcher and one of the better pitchers in the game. Chris Sale, you know, that's a write-off, even though I still think they probably could have done better in that game before Dickey kind of blew up. You know, Sale is just so terrific. And you can kind of go down the list and go back and think of some of the starters that they faced this year. But that's, you know, that's life in the American League, so they do have to do better. And I understand where Josh Donaldson is coming from on that. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be writing about it and sitting on my couch if I had the diagnosis of what can make the Blue Jays stop striking out so much right now.
Yeah, well, if you had the answer, it'd be great. Now, speaking of big hitters, We heard the reports that Encarnacion was offered a 2-year contract, could turn it down. Bautista, a 3-year deal. Clearly, I understand why they'd be more willing to go a little bit longer with Bautista than Encarnacion. They said they're going to revisit maybe at the All-Star break. If they don't, do they trade Encarnacion even if they're in the race, or do you think they keep him regardless and potentially just lose him in free agency?
I would be surprised if they moved either Bautista or Encarnacion, to be honest. I think Well, for one, they're both 10-5 guys, so they basically have no trade clauses. Any trade would have to be consented to them, and I'm sure that they, you know, if they had the right landing spot. I mean, a team who's trading for those guys in July isn't going to be a team that's not in the playoff race, but ideally the Blue Jays will be in a playoff race, and it'll be a moot point. And I think that's, despite, you know, things not going so great off the start, I think that's still probably going to be in the cards for them. So, yeah, I think they'll just play out the season, let them walk, or at least try to retain them, and probably have to watch them walk away after their attempts to re-sign them don't come to much.
Andrew Stoughton joins us. The one that would be the biggest loss, I think, out of the two, obviously, would be Jose Bautista, just because of what he does in the field as much as what he does at the plate. And it's very early on in this season, Andrew, and we've talked about the struggles of the Jays at the plate and a little bit at the bullpen right now. Starting pitching, Dickey obviously is struggling. Estrada last night was rubbing his shoulder throughout the game. John Gibbons got kicked out, and maybe he was in a little prickly mood after the game because he didn't really answer the question when he was asked, but it doesn't look good when your pitcher is rubbing his shoulder throughout the entire game.
And not when you let him pitch 118 pitches, too. Yeah, but they, I mean, that was an interesting situation when Gibbons wouldn't give that answer, and I think a lot of fans and a lot of the media guys who thought were you know, raised an eyebrow about it, just because. When he's doing it in plain view, you really shouldn't have to protect him at that point. You know, everybody saw on the TV that he was rubbing his shoulder a bit. But at the same time, Estrada was great again for the most part, and the starting pitching was supposed to be a weak spot, has been really going well. You know, Dickey is a slow starter, and Dickey's Dickey. You know, you're going to have a blow up inning every once in a while, and you hope there aren't not too many guys on base when the ball starts flying over the fence. But yeah, I if Estrada went out for any sort of length of time, that would be a real problem for them. I think he's been terrific, but it's a little too soon, especially because, you know, even after rubbing the shoulder, he was back in there and was doing all right.
Andrew, good rundown, man. We appreciate it as always. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Thank you very much. Anytime.